This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
This is Absolutely Everybody on Joy 94.9.
Welcome to Absolutely Everybody. I'm Julia and thanks for joining us for the next hour. Today we speak to a representative from one of Victoria's peak bodies advocating for older people, Cathy Mead, the Chair of CODA Victoria's Policy Council, who talks about her paper, Older People, Mental Health and Social Isolation, which is released today. Congratulations, Cathy. And she calls it an, here we go, anti-musical of a novel inside a reading of a play with footnotes and on oratorio as coda. That's a bit of a mouthful. We talked to writer Peter Murray about giving birth to an amazing piece of work and how she's going to get the community involved. And joining me in the studios, of course, is Trevor and Amy.
Hello and welcome.
Hello, everyone.
So, Trevor, do you want to... No, here we go. Do you want to talk a bit about tongue-in-cheek cock?
Absolutely. Also talking a little bit about... You know, it's a little bit more than a mouthful as you got stuck on those other words before. Absolutely. In the last show, we mentioned that we were off to see Cock Through the Week. I still struggle saying that word out loud. I'm such a prude on the inside. Amazing show. I know that Joy was giving away a number of free tickets to that. If you were lucky enough to get them, well done. And it's a really interesting one, I think, for Melbourne Theatre Company to put on. If people have normally gone to the Melbourne Theatre Company, and I know Jodie, our producer, is also a regular Melbourne Theatre Company person, not that it's a plug, they tend to do a whole lot of traditional plays or more safer plays, I suppose. But Cock was right out there. Not meaning to play with that one. That wasn't... Oh, there I go again. Can we have an edit button on this microphone?
We're doing well today.
Absolutely. I'm going to be in the coffee naughty corner again.
Oh, no. So I think it's interesting, though, and because, you know, the name is so provocative.
Absolutely,
and people
yeah.
get this idea in their head about what it could be, yeah. and yet that's not what it really is, which no, we may discuss a little later on.
Absolutely. Good play on the words for it.
Well, Julie, thanks, Trevor. We want to know who you are, so please phone us on 1300-JOY-940 or email us on onair@joy.org.au and tell us who you are and what you like to do with your time.
Joy 94.9 presents Absolutely Everybody, sponsored by and presented by Anecto, the People Network. Absolutely Everybody, only on Joy 94.9.
It's all about you, me and inclusion. Absolutely Everybody on Joy 94.9.
It's 11 minutes past midday and you're with Trevor, Amy and Julia. It's interesting that we're talking with Cathy Mead today about social isolation, particularly as we get older. This can be particularly so for folks from the LGBTI community and culturally diverse backgrounds. Trevor, your thoughts?
I think it's a really interesting one, particularly as we lead in from the young Delta Goodrum song, Together We Are One, is that whole notion about how do we actually do this? You know, what's it all about? How does it work? And, you know, why do we, you know, put so much focus on it?
It's, I think it was also interesting, a little while ago we interviewed a couple, Anne and Edie, and they were talking about community inclusion in Ballarat, for instance.
Yeah, yep.
And they said how important it was, especially as they got older, that you have to keep your foot in both camps. Literally. So
yes,
it's making sure that you're connected to the LGBTI community or whatever community that's important for you, but also staying connected to the community as a whole.
Absolutely.
And I think that sometimes if you isolate yourself and keep yourself very... You can become quite disconnected, I think, even with your own community.
Before, you were talking about Dr. Phil and his little bag of lolly analogy. Tell me about that one. I love it.
Look, I remember, you know, you see things on talkback radio sometimes when you're not well. And the one that always stuck with me was a woman had rung up about her daughter who'd been dumped basically by her best friend. And, of course, she was really distraught. And Dr. Phil talked about the analogy of the bag of lollies. And he kind of said, you know, you have a best friend, but you need to have backups.
Yeah. Yep.
And you need to have like all these other connections. So they may not be your best friend, but there are other people that you can hang out with and do things with. And I always remember that. And I think that's really important.
Mm, a good sense of building up resilience in kids in particular.
Absolutely. Yep. So next we're chatting with Peter Murray about her show Things That Fall Over, which is being presented this weekend at the Footscray Community Arts Centre.
New to Joy in 2014, this is Absolutely Everybody.
You're listening to Joy 94.9 and the time is 18 minutes past midday. She calls it an anti-musical of a novel inside the reading of a play with footnotes and, here we go again, oratorio as coda. Best known for her play Wallflowering, her numerous productions in Australia and overseas include Salt, which won the 2001 Lewis Essen Prize for Drama in the Victorian Premier Awards, and her new work Things That Fall Over has been a labour of love. Welcome, Peter Murray.
Thank you, Julia.
Now, as a female writer in Australia, you've had more success than some. Could you please talk about some of the highlights of your career so far?
I think one of the highlights of my career is the fact that I'm still doing it. It's the longevity factor that is a major force for me in terms of what I've done. Other highlights would probably be being welcomed to New York to attend a performance of my play Wallflowering at HB Studios in the Greenwich Village area. That
Fantastic.
Was a rather special experience. And another highlight would have to be winning what was then called the Gold Orgy. I think it has a different title now, but an Australian Writers Guild Award for my play The Keys to the Animal Room. And that was a community theatre work that I wrote for Junction Theatre Company in Adelaide about family violence, and I was completely taken by surprise, and I think everybody was when a community theatre work actually won that award that year.
That's fantastic. Peter, I heard that you'd become quite disillusioned by the representation and recognition of women in the arts. So this production, Things That Fall Over, is a mammoth undertaking, and you're going to have to excuse my ignorance here. Can you please take us through what it is?
Look, I used to think I knew, actually. It's a really good question, and I've been reflecting on that quite a bit lately because I'm writing program notes and trying to pull the whole thing together now that we're at the pointy end of this presentation. It started out as a research inquiry, actually. It started out as something I was doing for a master's degree, and out of an interest in, again, this idea of can a playwright like me endure in her practice over a long time. I started this in the late 80s, and so I'm still trying to keep doing my work. But the atmosphere in which I try to do my work was becoming more and more difficult. Fewer and fewer opportunities for women as playwrights. Also for women, female actors, that was the other thing that really started to rile me. You know, knowing a lot of women who are sensational actors who just get less and less work as they get older because the roles are not around. So I was thinking about all of those things. I was also thinking about the phenomenon of the late bloomer, and I was thinking, what about those women who don't even start their creative careers until they're in their 50s? What happens to them in this kind of atmosphere? And then at the same time, there was a whole lot of stuff in the zeitgeist. I'm thinking particularly about a lecture that Sophie Cunningham gave a couple of years ago at the Melbourne Writers Festival, where she kind of synthesised the whole thing across a lot of different arenas. And it just looked like there was a backlash. There was a correction, if you will. And a lot of the things that women had thought we'd won and the gains that we thought were solid were actually being eroded and taken back again. And so this was the kind of rocket fuel for this work.
That's really interesting. So I'll go back to a quote that I heard you say, because you're talking about it seems like this show took a really long time to actually put together. And you gave a quote by saying, "I'll stake a claim, I'm the slowest playwright in the Southern Hemisphere." Please tell me about that.
Yeah, look, I think I am. I used to joke that my first play took 28 years to write because that was about the age I was when the first play came. And since then, I've got faster. My other, quite well-known play, Salt, took 10 years. This thing's taken 6 years. So I'm hoping by the time I'm in my 80s, I'll be popping one out every couple of weeks. But, it is a really slow process for me, and it is a matter of construction, and it is a matter of layers. And so it does take take me a very long time to actually understand the intricacies of a work, and especially something of this scale, you know, with the title that you just gave us before. It is a very ambitious piece, and it's got a large number of people involved, and it is something that is quite a complicated animal. And to be quite honest, I don't actually know what it is anymore. I'm going to find out on Saturday, and I keep saying that to the cast. We'll all find out what it is when we see it on Saturday. It's very exciting.
That's a really good point. So, Peter, how have you been able to keep the project alive?
Oh, there have been moments when the project has not been so alive. It's been sort of needing to be resuscitated. Look, it's been an amazing experience, this. It's renewed itself. It's kind of like this, you know, a community has formed around it, and sometimes people have to step away and new people take their place, and some actors have worked on the roles for a while and then they haven't been able to continue and the right person has come along. There's a lot of trust involved in this project, a lot of sense that the right people will walk into the room when we need them, but also just this kind of sense that one person's energy buoys another. And so there's this sense that the piece renews itself. And some of the loveliest feedback I've had from the women who've been involved have been about what it's done for them, you know, that it actually does give them something back. So it's not just a one-way thing. And I think that sense of a dialogue, an energetic dialogue, if you like, between me and the people who are a part of it has been a big part of what's kept it going.
That's great. So what could people expect on Saturday when they come to your play?
Well, it's a kind of pantomime. It's a kind of musical. It's very queer. It's very funny. I used to pitch it as the women's circus meets the Goon Show meets Virginia Woolf meets Elizabeth Jolly meets Barks St. Matthews Passion. So there's a, you know, something for everybody. And our tagline is "See it once, and you need never go to the theatre again."
Oh, that's great. Peter, thank you so much for joining us. Oh, and thank you so much for explaining what Things That Fall Over is going to be all about. It sounds really exciting. And you can follow the unfolding of this mammoth production by following Things That Fall Over on Facebook. Next, we have Amy with the Absolutely Everybody Community Notice Board. And a bit later, Kathy Mead from Coda Vic joins us.
It's all about news, people and sharing common interests. Absolutely Everybody on Joy 94.9.
You're with Amy on Joy 94.9, and it's 12:30, and Julia's just got some information for us about the Peter Murray play.
Thanks, Amy. Now, if you would like to experience the Peter Murray Cultural Theatre Extravaganza, please head on down to the Footscray Community Arts Centre to see Swan Song at 8 p.m. this Saturday, the musical. If you'd like to get down there at 7:30, you can have a picnic. It's also featuring Margaret Roadknight and Lisa Mazza.
That sounds great, and I think the weather's might hold out, so everyone should head on down. I just wanted to talk today about some of the things that we've got going on at Enecto. We've got a great program called the Speakers Bank, where people with disabilities and from diverse backgrounds can be involved and tell their story. And organisations and sporting clubs and all different kinds of places can hire these great people to come and tell their stories and be more inclusive in the community and learn a bit more about what it's like to have a bit of a different experience and face some of the barriers that people with disabilities like myself have to deal with, and just some of the more positive ways that we get around and get through life. So if you want to get involved, you can contact Enecto on 9687 7066 or on the Facebook page and check us out, because it's a great program and we want more and more people to be involved. And I'll hopefully have some interviews in the coming weeks and months with some of the Speakers Bank participants, and that way we can get everyone more involved. We also have some positions available at Enecto for placement and work in Melbourne and the Loddon Valley and Sydney's West. So you can check that out at enecto.org.au/careers. Now, Trevor, you've got some info for us about Mardi Gras coming up this weekend.
Absolutely. As we all know, it is this weekend up in Sydney. There is, I think it's talking about the weather, there's a predicted chance of small little bit of rain. But we have to make sure that we all go up there, support the environment, have a great time. And if you can't actually get there, just a reminder that Joy 94.9 at Sydney's 2SER are presenting their view, I suppose, a live broadcast from 7pm about what's happening up there for the Mardi Gras. So again, it's a 36th year, which I think is pretty amazing to start off with. And for those who can't get up there, please listen and join us online.
Yeah, and it's always great to have a party for Mardi Gras because it just happens to be my birthday weekend. So a shout out to my lovely twin, Adam, who's also celebrating his birthday on Sunday. And look forward to celebrating with you, mate. So, yeah.
And so a big happy birthday to you as well.
Yeah, it should be fun. Hopefully it doesn't rain.
It's all about you, me, and inclusion. Absolutely everybody on Joy 94.9.
It is 22 minutes to 1 o'clock. Code of Victoria released today a new paper on the link between mental health, social inclusion for older people. This may not be a surprise to many people, the links that the report is making. And to chat more about that, we welcome Kathy Mead, Chair of CODA Victoria's Policy Council, to talk about their findings. Hi, Kathy. Kathy, welcome. I've just read your bio, pretty amazing stuff, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that as we go over the next part of the interview. CODA is a very familiar organisation to me, but for our listeners, they may not know what it is. So what's CODA?
Okay, CODA, the Council on the Age, it's been around for 60 years. We got our seniors card last year. It's an organisation for older Victorians in Victoria, but it's also a national organisation that works with older people to improve their lives, develop social connectedness, information, advocacy, those sorts of things.
So you've just turned 60. I think that's pretty amazing. I love the idea that an organisation has its own senior card. Today's a very important day for you. You've got a launch of your latest report, the Older Australians Mental Health and Social Isolation Report. Apart from the title, which is, you know, pretty explanatory, what does the report show or highlight?
What we wanted to look at particularly was our understanding of the term social isolation. What did it mean and how was it connected to mental health? We were concerned particularly to examine whether policies that were addressing the needs of older people could have been inadvertently increasing their social isolation and what effect might that be having on mental health. And we also wanted to look at how you could prevent social isolation, how to work with people who are either becoming isolated or at risk of becoming isolated. So we wanted to really understand the terms and really understand the kind of the two-way street between mental health and social isolation.
Sure. We've covered, you know, things around social isolation a couple of times on the show, so it's really good that that links into the theme. What was the biggest finding that amazed or stunned you from your...
Amazed or stunned? Yeah. I think one of the interesting things is that when you're looking to address someone's needs around social isolation, that the one-on-one isn't the most important thing.
Okay.
The most important thing, the most effective things are those whole-of-society or community neighbourhood things. So that we need to work on that kind of systems and neighbourhoods and community development rather than saying we work with this one individual with this one program. And I think that sometimes a bit hard for people to get their head around that that's where we need to work and that's where the evidence says things are effective.
That's quite amazing because most of the stuff that I've seen, it's about connections with your neighbour or, you know, one person or making sure that you've got a presence. So the report's actually showing it needs to be bigger than just one person.
Yeah, bigger than just one person. You know, how does our society operate? What are the things that enable people to be more socially connected? You know, things like transport, housing, you know, those sorts of things that, and things that create a community and create connections in the community are really, really important. Hence, CODA does a lot of work around developing age-friendly communities across Victoria. We work with local governments particularly around that, and that's a concept of how a whole community works and how a whole community is age-friendly.
Okay.
And it's important to have older people participating, be active participants in how a community operates and works.
That's fantastic. Again, there's some of those keywords that we keep hearing over the course of the program, which is, again, a really good thing to see that there's lots of links between the groups that we're trying to work with or engaged with. What are some of the things that we can do to address the issues highlighting, you know, that have been highlighted in your report?
Well, I think we looked at some particular examples of how policies might inadvertently increase the risk of social isolation. So we're focusing very much at the moment in policies around aged care on keeping people in their own homes. Mm-hmm. And we're putting a lot of resource and effort into that. But the question I wanted to ask was, if we're therefore increasing the number of people living alone, are we inadvertently increasing the risk of mental health issues through social isolation? So if our services are focused around people's physical needs, are we missing out on their social needs? And so that was one question I wanted to ask.
And I think that's a really brilliant question to ask, because we keep on doing that ageing in place and ageing well in place, but I suppose we forget, as you said, that idea about the socialisation that comes, the social isolation that comes with that.
And another example is housing policy. If more and more older people are in rental accommodation, mm-hmm. and that looks to be the future of where housing policy is going, rental accommodation for older people can be very insecure. How do you then maintain connections in a community if your housing is insecure?
Absolutely,
So it's not, we're not saying that, you know, those policies, you know, say around, you know, how services are provided are wrong or ineffective. We're saying when you put those policies in place, to think also about the social questions around transport's another one. You know, people can't maintain connections if they haven't got good transport. If older people are dependent on public transport, mm-hmm. how friendly is that public transport? How connected is it? In regional areas, how is public transport? Is it limiting people's capacity to be connected?
Okay. So do you think that things like the new improved tram stops and, you know, what I call the super tram stops, are they actually improving things or are they hindering things?
I think the intention is to improve things, because mm-hmm. it makes the trams more accessible for people whose mobility is limited. I think you find that, as people become less physically capable, their capacity to use public transport becomes limited. So things that improve the accessibility of public transport is one thing, but community volunteer transport is another aspect. In regional areas, it's not the tram stops that are the issue,
absolutely.
It's the very existence of public transport that's the issue.
And being in a city base, I have this almost egocentric approach to what transport
yes,
is.
Yes, we do have a sort of city approach
absolutely.
To how things work.
For me, I'm on three tram lines, so I can just walk to the other one. If
yes, but if you're on three tram lines but you can't get to the tram stop.
Absolutely, or even into the tram.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So what else has the report highlighted?
I think the other things we highlight, things of particular interest to me, is that we need to be to make sure we properly evaluate things that we do, that we don't just think, well, that looked like it worked, so it must have worked.
Yep.
So important things to me are that we base what we do on good evidence and that we contribute to the development of evidence so that other people coming after us, other organisations wanting to do things, have a base to look at. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons why we did the paper, to bring all the information together to start conversations.
Perfect. And that paper's been launched today.
Launched today.
Brilliant.
Yep.
Can't wait to see the report. We will actually get the details about where we can find that.
Yep.
But just in closing, are there any other issues that would be more relevant to the LGBT community?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think a couple of things affecting our community is housing and you know, how accessible, how new forms of housing are welcomed by our community.
Mm-hmm.
Older people who may have had their workplace as their social sort of connectedness, if you lose that and you haven't got a kind of strong family base to kind of follow that working life, that's another issue. If people have not been particularly open about their sexuality during their working life, then what happens in older age? Does that affect your capacity to be connected in the community? If a particular community is very youth-centric, then how are the older members of that community feeling? So there are some things that, that our community does need to think about like that.
And how can we address them very quickly?
The conversations are really important. You know, having the conversation, talking about it, thinking that mental health is as important as our physical health, I think, is really important.
Fantastic. And there's aspects of that within your report?
We do raise that in the report.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay. Very quickly, where can we find a copy of it?
Well, the copies are being launched at our CODA office today. The CODA office is in Block Arcade in the city. We'll have a copy on our link on our website, and you can get copies from CODA. So fantastic. We hope it has a wide audience.
And the website is?
The website.
We can find out.
You better find out for me.
Not a problem. We will track that down between the next song break. Kathy, thank you so much for your time. Really good luck with the launch today. And we look forward to, you know, talking more about this in the next coming months.
Great.
Thank you
for
your time.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we actually have the website. It's been madly pushed across the desk to me as we speak. The CODA website where you can find a copy of that report is coda.vic.org.au. It is 12 minutes to 1 o'clock. You're listening to Joy 94.9.
It's all about you, me and inclusion. Absolutely everybody on Joy 94.9.
The time is 7 minutes to one, and you're back with the team on Joy 94.9. Time to wrap up our seventh show for the year. We're doing good, guys.
We are doing extremely well.
Trevor and Amy, it's been a great show today.
I think we covered a fair amount of stuff, and we've raised some really important issues for me. I've had to think about some things which, you know, have moved me beyond my old way of thinking, which has been great.
Yes, and I have even more information to give out to the listeners out there. In celebration of International Women's Day, the International Women's Development Agency will be celebrating with an evening called Half the Sky at ACME, and this will include keynote speakers, including the Minister assisting the Prime Minister for Women, Senator... this is going to be a bad name... Michaela Cash and Ms. Moisten, President of the Australian Council for International Development, as well as the non-executive board of director on the AFL Commission. If you want to find out more information about this great event, you can contact Kelly Smith Holborn. Email her at ksmithholborn@iwda.org.au, or probably easier, phone on 9650 5574 and get involved in this great event for International Women's Day.
And I think some of that sort of stuff takes us back to our earlier conversations about, Julie, you were talking about the foot in both camps with, you know, Anne and Edie, that whole thing about social inclusion as you're ageing, you know, linking it into, you know, the International Women's Day or, you know, events like that to keep us actually connected into the community.
You know, I think there's so many things that we need to think about, you know, and if you really sat there and mapped out what you'd love to do in your life, that would give you a multitude of options. And I think sometimes we get so caught up on one thing.
Yes.
Again, you need that bag of lollies.
Absolutely. That's going to be the theme for the day. We should incorporate that into our T-shirts or our drinking coffee cups.
Well and truly. I think also, Trevor, it's going back to what you're saying about the conversation we heard from Kota was incredibly thought-provoking.
Absolutely.
Because
it
challenges, I think, everything that we've done in our careers about, you know, keeping people in their own homes is paramount for some.
For some, absolutely. I've got to stop saying absolutely. I've got half of those words out. That's correct.
So if we talk about, you know, what's right for the person, Trevor, your thoughts on that? Because it is a really complex... It's a really complex issue.
Absolutely. And absolutely. Amy and I have discussed, you know, a number of times about that thing about, you know, one model shouldn't fit everybody. And yet we keep on trying to develop models of care or models of support where we should be going, here's the person, these are some of their needs, and how do we actually work with them to meet their needs, not the perceptions of our needs for them?
Yeah, and it comes back to I guess, economy partly and money, but also a political will to look at things in a different way and not be quite so blinkered and boxed in how we approach things. And as you said, Trevor, one box doesn't fit everyone.
Absolutely, yeah.
And we should have the options to stay in our own home or maybe have, you know, supported accommodation or more community-based.
Sure. We actually just have some feedback in from Harry. Harry lives in South Melbourne and he's, you know, right onto this theme about the social isolation and inclusion and model stuff. And his text says, just because you see me, you know, make sure that you don't forget to ask what I need and don't give me what you think I need. I think it's really clear about that whole thing about, you know, not boxing us in, social inclusion. Let's ask. Let's have the conversation.
And certainly as a social work student, we are taught from day one, don't make assumptions about people. Don't think that we are the experts and that we know what's going on. Ask people, have a conversation, engage with people and take the time to actually listen and genuinely try and figure out what works for people and understand that that can't work at every level of government.
Yeah.
But there are levels where it should be able to work.
So how do they teach you that in your course, Amy?
It's just about seeing people as people and not making wild assumptions and saying, well, for instance, I'm in a wheelchair, therefore I can't do this or that.
Sure.
When actually there's lots of things that we can do, just in different ways. And it's same for older people.
Yep.
Don't assume that because someone's older, they don't still have a sexuality and, you know, a past and, you know, a vibrant personality. Mm. So
and their only interest being that whole thing about photos on the fridge of the grandchildren.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So next week we will be chatting with Kelly Smith-Holburn from the International Women's Development Agency. And for more information, please check out our Absolutely Everybody Radio on Facebook.
Oh, and podcasting. We are now up. Thank you so much, Brent. You are a gem. Absolute gem.
Yes, and to all my international friends, I hope you enjoy the show. Listen in and you might even get a shout out every couple of weeks or so. All those jet-setting people around the globe.
And please, as Trevor so rightly said, don't forget to listen to our podcasts and like us on Facebook. It would be great.
Like us any way you want to. We'll take it.
Well and truly, it's
we're pretty
great.
Easy, aren't we?
Yeah. All righty. So up next is Mark with the Afternoon Joy Show. And thank you, listeners, for joining us on our hour. And thank you to Trevor and Amy for a fabulous conversation.
And I also feel like we should be doing that, you know, clap and pause to the producer, the
Absolutely.
Person who pushes our buttons in a nice way.
Yes.
And thanks, guys. And let's chat again next week.
See you all next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.